The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
We're getting you ready for the game on The Buildup with news from around the league, interviews, highlights, and more. Here's your host, Ted Ramey.
All right, what's happening, everyone? It is time for the Sharks to take on the Ottawa Senators today at 4 o'clock from SAP Center, 3:30 pregame right here on the Sharks Audio Network. I will be on NBC if you want to catch me there, but we are looking at a two-game win streak, and the San Jose Sharks is arguably the hottest team in the NHL, or at least in that discussion, which is fun to say. I spoke with Roxie Bernstein, who was on the call for ESPN on Thursday night, and of course is a Bay Area native, has spent his entire life paying attention to the San Jose Sharks, as well as broadcasting a few of their games for ESPN and the San Jose Sharks over the years. Roxie, what's going on, man? How are you doing?
Good morning, Ted. How are you?
I'm excellent, man. And I realize I have to start off with not an apology, but a point of clarity I need to make, because in the Ramey household, we're big fans of you. The Bay Area is big fans of you because you're a Bay Area native. You've called Sharks games for us before and on ESPN. But I often put out these tweets that say, if you want a home broadcast, tune in to the Sharks Audio Network when it's a national game. That is in no way meant to be disrespectful to you. I just know that fans sometimes prefer the home broadcast. So I just wanted to make sure that was clear. I am a big fan of Roxie Bernstein, and I was hoping that that wasn't offending you.
I did not take it as a personal slight, because I love Dan Rusinowski as much as the next person. Believe me. And it's funny because one of my ESPN directors, longtime friend of mine also, is a huge LA Kings fan. And so like an hour before the game on Thursday, he texts me, no being a homer tonight. I lived here. I've lived here all my life. As you pointed out, I've worked for the Sharks. My son plays for the Junior Sharks, so it's an organization that's near and dear to my heart. But, you know, when I get to call a game for ESPN, it needs to be a different presentation. Mm-hmm. And I've got to be down the middle, even though, okay, yeah, secretly I probably do want the guys in teal and black to win. But, you know, my obligations to my employer and do the best job possible, and neutrality is a must.
No, I think you do a fantastic job. And, you know, the games that you've gotten to call for the Sharks in recent memory have not always been the prettiest, but suddenly this team's taken a big step forward. And you and I last year at games and, you know, before the season, you know, maybe, well, previous years we'd pull on our collars a bit and go, yikes, this this is going to be interesting. But suddenly the narrative has shifted and the Sharks are the hottest team in the NHL, arguably. I don't think you and I saw this coming, because after the two games ago that you did, I said, how concerned should Sharks fans be? Of which you said, okay, you know, calm things down. But at the same time, I don't think you saw this coming.
I don't think anybody saw this coming, to be honest with you. And even if you were to pin down Ryan Warsawski, I don't think he saw this happening as quickly as it did. The horrible start, winless in the first six, going 0-4-2. But something has been figured out. And defensively, look, there's so much attention, Ted, on Celebrini, and deservedly so. He is becoming a superstar right in front of our eyes. But it's bigger than just Macklin Celebrini. It's defensively. They're connected. They're protecting Askarov and Delkovic in goal, who have been spectacular the last, 10, 11 games. The penalty kill has been tremendous. It's more than just Macklin Celebrini. Yes, he's the guy that drives the bus, but he's got a lot of people dragging it with him and pulling it with him, because it's not happening single-handedly for the Sharks.
No, it is not happening single-handedly. And that's what was maybe so impressive about that win the other night. And I know people could say, well, it's another overtime shootout win. But when you look at the narrative the past couple of years of how many one goal or overtime or one goal plus an empty netter type losses that the Sharks had, these are the games that they need to win. But on top of that, that wasn't one of those Macklin Celebrini games where he goes off for an incredible performance. That was an offseason signing in Gaudette, an offseason signing in Kurashev, right? Like, these are players. Dellandrea in his second season with San Jose, unheralded when he comes to the team, but now playing an important role. And yes, you did have Macklin Celebrini with an assist in there, but this is a team type win where it's the goalie, to your point, the defense, which has shown so much more structure. It's coming from all angles, which is exactly what you want to see, even if Macklin Celebrini is going to go supernova at times.
It's very clear the Kings were trying to limit Celebrini as much as they could. They were running bodies at him to a point where they were being extremely physical, which I know a lot of teams are trying to do that also. But when you have somebody like Kopitar down the middle, who is as good defensively and responsible defensively as any center in the league, they tried to get that matchup. They were trying to negate them as much as possible. But it was great to see, as you pointed out, Ted, the line of Dellandrea, Gaudette, and Graf. They were spectacular, I thought, in the game Thursday night.
Yeah.
And they controlled a lot of the play when they were out there. Graf has been so good on the penalty kill in recent weeks and really emerging as a top defensive threat for the Sharks. But you need to have that depth. You can't just rely on that top line. Yes, Kurashev came up with a huge goal and also responded in the shootout as well. But you need to have depth. You have to have balance in your lineup. If you're top heavy, you're going to run into problems. And like, I look at Utah, for example, right now as a team that's, they're scuffling and they're a little top heavy. They don't have the scoring depth at this point that you need to have. The Sharks are getting it right now. Dellandrea, that line, he had the goal off his skate. Graf had two assists. Gaudette had the big goal to get it going. You have to get those contributions up and down the lineup. That can make it successful for a team.
No, it most certainly can. And to watch the Sharks find different combinations and different players stepping up at different moments, that is a big part of how good teams end up winning in the NHL. You brought up Kopitar. I'm just curious, did you see any of the footage after the game when the Sharks presented him with a bottle of wine and you had Reeves saying he wanted to get into it with him one more time? That's one of those things about hockey, the respect, Roxy, between all guys. You know, it's a rivalry on the ice, but these are not enemies. There are two very different mentalities at play.
And I'll pull back the curtain a little bit, too, because we were, I saw it firsthand, at least them waiting for Kopitar in the opposite hallway on the other side of the arena from the Sharks dressing room. As Cassie Campbell, Pascal and I, and a couple of our coworkers at ESPN came down the elevator after the game, and we're walking and making the pivot around, you know, the backside of that hallway where the Kings locker room is. And we saw a group of Sharks, Ryan Reeves, Tyler Toffoli, Macklin Celebrini, Will Smith. They were all waiting for Kopitar because they wanted to give him a gift from the organization, pay their respects to him. One of the elite players that we've seen in the game, a two-time cup winner. And especially for Toffoli, who played with him. And,
right.
And he was a big influence on Tyler Toffoli as a young player. We were talking to Tyler after the morning skate on Thursday, and he was reflecting on the influence that Anze Kopitar had on him, his development as an NHL player, teaching him to be a true professional. And it's funny, one of the other reporters, it may have been Shang, asked him in the scrum, will he be asking for a Kopitar jersey? Because this could be the last time that he's playing against him, or at least the last time he's playing against him at the tank. And Toffoli kind of threw himself under the bus. He's like, I probably should have asked for that earlier. I waited too long probably to do it just because of our relationship. But it really was a classy gesture and well-deserved considering the contributions that Kopitar has had, yes, to two cups in L.A., but really he's been a standout true pro for a lot of years and well representing the league.
I do have to go to the Macklin Celebrini angle now because he is a phenomenon when watching him play, Roxy. Last year, I saw it with my own eyes so many times to where I was thinking to myself, this kid already looks like one of the best players in the NHL. I didn't come out and say that, though, because I knew people would say, well, we can see Ted's checks and who's signing them, as I try to have some sense of impartiality, even though clearly I work for the Sharks. But it would sound hyperbolic to say an 18-year-old was already one of the best in the league, but I've watched enough hockey in my life to know, yes, he was quote unquote playing like one of the best players in the league. But this year, I think people are realizing, okay, he's made a big jump. I don't see any reason why it's not sustainable. I don't know about the points pace, but the impact he has on each and every game, it seems like. I thought he was a superstar, but I do think the way he stepped up is even beyond what I had previously considered, because he is playing at an elite level. It's a complete game, and the compete level is off the charts. I thought it was high last year, and now he's doing the Michael Jordan, Larry Bird thing of where he seems to take the other team's goals or plays as a perceived slight and finds motivation in that.
And if you talk to other players around the league, some high-level players, some superstars, if you will. I talked to Sebastian Aho when the Hurricanes were here early in the year, and I asked him just his feeling on what he's seeing with Celebrini, and he said he's doing stuff a 19-year-old kid shouldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he is at right now. I mean, he plays like a veteran who has been a star in the league for years, and he's just 19 years of age. The compete level, the drive that he has, that's what separates him. Yes, he's got the talent, and yes, he's got the skill set. It's the compete, it's the inner drive that he has. And growing up around professional sports like he did with his dad being a former soccer player, and then growing up around greatness around the Warriors, right?
Yeah.
With Steph Curry and Draymond Green, I don't think it can be overstated. The importance that Steph and Draymond had on him, seeing it firsthand as a kid and what it takes to be great. And there's no question those two have rubbed off. And even when Kevin Durant came through the Warriors, mm-hmm. that those NBA stars have rubbed off on him. Even though it's a different sport, it's the mentality. It's the inner drive to push yourself and make you the best possible version of Macklin Celebrini he can be. And it's evident that those people influenced him and helped shape the superstar that he's become.
We go back to the late aughts of this century. The Sharks were gaining a lot of attention. The tank was the most happening place in the Bay Area. The Giants had their run. The Warriors had their dynasty. The 49ers, as it got later into the decade, started having, well, they had a mini run with Harbaugh and then again with Shanahan, consistent contenders. But if the Sharks have these young stars of Celebrini and Smith and Askarov, and obviously we are yet to see the more of a complete picture on Misa and Dickinson, et cetera, et cetera, can they be part of that greater Bay Area sports pantheon that maybe they were cut short a little bit, because when they had their Stanley Cup run, it was also when the Warriors were in the NBA Finals, and when they had other deep runs, it was also when the Giants were the talk of the town. I mean, it seems like there could be a little bit of an aligning of the stars to where the Warriors run is ending. There's a lot of question marks with the 49ers. Same thing with the Giants. Can the Sharks steal some of that Bay Area attention?
We pour a little bit out for the Oakland A's after the runs that they had under Bob Melvin, too.
Of course. It's confusing to qualify things constantly. If the A's now in Sacramento.
Still hurts. there's an opportunity. And unfortunately, just the landscape of the Bay Area, it seems, look, I'm as passionate as of hockey as anybody, but it always seems that the Sharks have taken a backseat. For whatever reason, even when the building was full and you had a superstar in Joe Thornton and you had some of the elite players in the game with Marlowe and Pavelski, and we can go on and on with the great run and how consistent they were over the years. Maybe this run, because Celebrini is kind of a homegrown talent, played for the Junior Sharks, even though, you know, his formative years were in Vancouver, but did spend time here as a kid, his connection with his family and his dad, the Warriors, that maybe this is what can really jumpstart the game and the interest from the casual Bay Area sports fan. That we've seen a growth in junior hockey around here.
Mm-hmm.
And with the programs and so many great initiatives the Junior Sharks are doing. And it's not just the Junior Sharks, but the other club programs that are around the area. It is growing. And it takes a while in places for a sport to catch on. And early on with the Sharks, starting at the Cal Palace, then moving down San Jose in year three, there was a growth to the game. And I think we're hitting a second growth period that can coincide with this, the team elevating and ascending to the top of the NHL. Look, there's more than likely, look, I don't want to put, you know, the horse before the cart. And everybody's talking about the playoffs, and that would be great. It'd be unbelievable. and we see how this thing plays out. But more than likely, you're still looking at a year or two away, right?
Yeah.
That's what conventional wisdom will tell you. But there is juice back in the building. There is excitement around this organization that hasn't been felt in a long time. And it's not just because of Celebrini. It's all the young talent. It's Smith. It's Askarov. It's Dickinson. We go on, and there's more talent in the pipeline, as we know. But there's another step, and then another step. The problem is the Western Conference right now is so loaded.
Yeah.
Look at teams like what Colorado's doing is ridiculous. To have, what, one loss in regulation at this point of the season is insane. But it's Dallas. It's Winnipeg. Then you look at the Pacific Division. Edmonton's going to figure it out.
Right.
When you have McDavid and Draisaitl, I still think that people, oh, what's going on? What's going on with the Oilers? Maybe they're not as good as they were. They went to the Cup Final each of the last 2 years. But they're going to figure it out. And this division is going to be challenging. And there's teams on the come, like the Sharks, like Utah. I think Seattle is a team that's starting to ascend. Vegas has clearly established themselves year in, year out. So it's going to be tough to push your way up the Western Conference. But I'm not going to doubt these guys. At some point, I think they're going to make a push to be one of the top teams out West.
One of the most impressive things about Thursday night was the fact that the tank felt like the tank. That felt like a rivalry game. The beat LA chance. The intensity before face-offs. There have been some great crowds at SAP Center the last few years. I'm not trying to overlook any of the great crowds we've had there because the tank is always loud with the way the ceiling is constructed. The sound bounces around. Even with a small crowd, it's a good energy. But that felt distinctly different. I don't think that I felt what I felt Thursday night since the 2019 run to the Western Conference Final. How did it feel to you?
It felt the same, Ted, to be honest with you. It really did. And Cassie Campbell, Pascal, and I were talking about it off air. And she done playoff games over the years in the building. And she basically said, this building is back. This franchise is back now. And it's clearly on the rise. And when you have that kind of presence, the buzz in the building, and John Tortorella talked about it in one of our intermission periods, saying, look, when I would bring teams in there, that was the toughest building in the league to play in. And it was like that Thursday night. Now, the Joe Thornton ceremony probably had a little bit to do with it also, bringing out almost, it was almost a sellout. It was really close. But you talked about the energy in the building. The other thing that stood out to me about that game and the rivalry was the nastiness out there, the physicality. It was clearly there. And that's a sign, I think, of respect from the Kings toward the Sharks, that they realize this isn't the same team we pushed around for the last number of years. They're here to compete now. And I think LA sensed that and had to kind of push back because for a lot of years recently, Ted, the state of California belonged to the LA Kings. Now you look what the Ducks have going on and they're playing tremendous hockey and the Sharks are pushing. All of a sudden, California doesn't automatically belong to the LA Kings anymore. And this is also a road trip now where I think, especially the East Coast teams, they get all three on the same trip. This is a trip they're going to start dreading again. For years, they didn't. It was okay. We get a couple of lower-level opponents in the Kings. Not the same. These days, all three games are going to be stiff tests for teams coming to California.
What happens when the Sharks are no longer just having fun? Because right now, the weight of expectation is nowhere to be seen. That hasn't entered the equation yet. This is all just a good time right now. How does this team manage once expectations start to enter the narrative?
That's going to be an interesting dynamic in play. The mentality when all of a sudden you go from the hunter to the hunted. And it's going to happen at some point if the ascension keeps going the way we all think it will go. And it's going to be a shift in the mentality. And how do you handle that? And you see it in all sports, whether it's baseball, when teams are all of a sudden trying to build their way back up, or football. All of a sudden, teams look at you differently. The scout reports are different. That's the challenging. That's one of those steps in the process, Ted, that you and I were alluding to before. Mm-hmm. Is how do you handle success? And then also, how do you handle when the Sharks used to get the best shot from other teams, night in, night out, because they knew coming in the building was going to be tough. That's what's coming also when you make that jump up in the eyes of your opponents.
Roxy, I will let you go because I know you have stuff to do, but this is great chatting with you about a fun Sharks team. Let's keep on having some fun things to talk about. I appreciate your time as always, man, and I will see you at the tank soon, all right?
Look forward to it. Thanks for having me, Ted.
Again, that is Roxy Bernstein joining us here on the Sharks Audio Network. We're out of time. Pre-game 3:30, go time 4 right here as the Sharks take on the Senators. And then tomorrow, it's a back-to-back with the Bruins in town and the Sharks taking them on at 5. Pre-game for that one will be at 4:30. More coming to you soon here on the Sharks Audio Network. For the San Jose Sharks, I'm Ted Ramey, signing off.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yend.